Emporium 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua shares his visit to the Pennsylvania Fish Hatchery in Pleasant Mount. Sullivan County organic farmer and educator Maria Grimaldi from Panther Rock Farm inspires us to attend her events at the Livingston Manor Library coming up soon, spring and summer. And we'll sample a taste of the future of farming, which is a Radio Catskill special presentation featuring our local farmers who are considered beginner farmers. But first, news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. A bill to reauthorize the federal government's electronic surveillance program is awaiting President Biden's signature. The Senate approved a 2-year extension early this morning, less than an hour after the law had expired at midnight. Senator Angus King announced the result.
On this vote, the yeas are 60, the nays are 34. Under the previous order requiring 60 votes for the passage of this bill, the bill is passed.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer thanked his colleagues on both sides of the aisle. He said the law is needed to protect the nation.
It's an important part of our national security toolkit and helps law enforcement stop terrorist attacks, drug trafficking, and violent extremism.
The law allows federal law enforcement agencies to monitor the communications of foreigners without court approval that may include communications with Americans. The House is expected to vote today on legislation to give foreign aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. The bills are coming to the floor with the help of Democrats. A few Republicans are threatening to vote to remove Mike Johnson as House Speaker. A jury has been seated in former President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial in New York City. Now prosecutors and the defense are waiting to learn whether Trump, should he testify in the case, can be questioned about a long list of past judicial rulings against him. NPR's Andrea Bernstein reports.
Trump says he wants to testify, but in a hearing at the end of the week, the Manhattan DA's office argued that if he does, it wants to question his credibility by asking him about the recent $500 million civil fraud judgment against him, the two defamation suits E. Jean Carroll won against him, the conviction of his company on felony fraud charges, and other recent judicial rulings against the former president. Trump's team says these judgments are all being appealed or are disputed, but the DA's office argues New York law allows it to probe a defendant's credibility by inquiring about prior bad acts. The judge's ruling could affect Trump's decision to testify. Andrea Bernstein, NPR News, New York.
The Israeli military says 10 Palestinian gunmen were killed and 8 arrested yesterday during clashes in a West Bank refugee camp near Tilcom. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Jerusalem.
The Israel Defense Forces said troops joined with border police officers in the raid on the Nur Shams refugee camp. It said in addition to the gunmen killed, several Palestinians were detained and explosive devices were found. Palestinian media reported that the local commander of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Muhammad Jaber, was killed in the raid. The IDF said it scanned buildings and bulldozers tore up roads searching for suspected explosive devices. Hamas released a statement mourning what it called the heroic martyrs who confronted the troops. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. This is your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Sullivan County organic farmer and educator Maria Grimaldi from Panther Rock Farm inspires us to attend her events at the Livingston Manor Library coming up soon, spring and summer. And we'll sample a taste of the future of farming, which is a Radio Catskill special presentation featuring our local farmers who are considered beginner farmers. First, here is Sweetwater fishing guide, Evan Padua. thanks for joining us for this locally produced Farm and Country.
We're up here at the Pleasant Mount Fish Hatchery for the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission, and we got a tour with the Wayne Tomorrow Foundation in Wayne County, and we were shown some walleye spawning practices, and we're looking at a fish tank here right now with some walleye and some perch and all kinds of fish that were all pulled out of Lake Wallenpaw Pack and put in an observation tank for us here. Quite a large brown trout in here, probably pushing 24, 25 inches. And there's a hybrid striped bass. There's a school of perch. There's a channel catfish, a few walleye, common carp, bluegill, black crappie. Then there are some lake trout in here, which did not come from Lake Wallenpaw Pack. There's a white sucker. But it's interesting because you can kind of see which fish like to school, how they like to sit in the water, if they're sitting on the bottom or suspended in the water column like the trout is. And you've got a big 43-inch northern pike, the biggest they've netted out of Lake Wallenpaw Pack, sitting on the bottom of the tank. So that's a specimen to observe as well. It's pretty cool.
And there's some really cute little striped ones down there. What are those?
Those are the yellow perch, yeah. And those spawn in the spring as well as the walleye. This time of year, their fins become nice and red and accentuated, and they have yellow roe and then the white milt that we became familiar with in the hatchery today with the fishery biologists. So it's a really cool facility we got to check out.
We went on a tour inside of these buildings, and they described the process. You understood most of what was going on, and then there was a special event that took place. So tell us what you learned today and what you saw on this tour.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We got to see all the fish runways and the tanks that they move the different fish eggs and fry through. So we literally got to see the entire life process of a walleye, including basically breeding two walleye, a male and a female. And we took probably about five or six females and squeezed the eggs out into a dog food bin type thing. And then we took about five or six males, milt, and put that in the bin as well. And then used a very high-tech mixing tool, which is actually a turkey feather on a stick. And that is a very gentle way to combine the eggs. We mix the eggs up for about 45 seconds. So all the males milt and the eggs were fertilized. And then basically the process has started. And now about 21 days, we'll have walleye fry. So it was a really cool process to be a part of with this group here. And the fishery biologists and technicians are all very knowledgeable here at this hatchery.
We're not fooling. It is April, and this is the time for breeding.
There's a lot of fish that spawn in the spring. Rainbow trout spawn in the spring, walleye, yellow perch, different things. So, yeah, spring is everything's popping out of the ground. We got the crocuses and daffodils and forsythia soon behind. So everything's coming to life.
It's really special to be here with you because you're the fly fishing guide on the Upper Delaware River. Were there other guides here today?
There were not a whole lot of fishing guides here today, but there were a bunch of fishery technicians and Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission people, and they just wanted to remind everyone also that the Fish and Boat Commission is really funded by your dollars. It's not tax dollars. It's your dollars buying state fishing licenses, your Pennsylvania boat registrations. There is a tax on boat fuel that they get a lot of money from that tax that goes right to the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission. And there's a fishing excise tax, a boating excise tax. So they are funded by our recreation. And the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission in particular is very good at what they do. They are looking out for the average angler. And so it's important to support this organization.
Yes, I agree. And it's important for people to understand when they eat fish, how they come about, or when you're catching them as a sport, whatever it is. This place is full of education, and our hosts here were very inviting, asking people to come by for a tour if anybody wants it.
Yeah, basically this hatchery, which is in Pleasant Mount, Pennsylvania, located just below the Belmont Dam, it's open pretty much, I think, 7 days a week, maybe 5 days a week, but open for visitors all the time. And all of their stocking programs are open to the public. So, and you can find on pafishboat.com, I believe, and you can find the stocking schedules. You can help them stock any body of water at any time when they're doing it. So they want to keep the public involved.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Rosie.
Please. Please welcome Sullivan County organic farmer and educator, Maria Grimaldi from Panther Rock Farm.
I'm a longtime member of WJFF from its beginning, and I live actually outside of Youngsville, between Youngsville and Livingston Manor on Hardenburg Road. And I've had various farm and nursery businesses. Right now, I'm sort of retired, but I'm very, very interested, particularly in medicinal plants. This is a result, I think, of COVID, when COVID hit our area. I was always interested in medicinal plants, but then I became extremely interested in them.
Well, Maria Grimaldi, I understand you have a background in permaculture. You did classes for Apple Pond Farm. You were associated with the Cornell Cooperative Extension, and now you're aspiring to have an event at the Livingston Manor Library coming up this summer. Let's talk a little bit about your background. You have an extreme interest in a lot of botanical things. And so let's talk about your background, your parents, and your academic background.
Well, I grew up in a family of flower and vegetable foodies, an Italian family in New Jersey. Eventually, when I went to New York City, I also became very involved in the community gardening effort there and tree care, because I missed that living in New York. It seemed there was a dearth of green space and the trees were in terrible condition. So I started doing some volunteer work and helped develop some programs in the city with the Department of General Services, including some of the community gardens that are still flourishing, some of the very ones that I became involved with. But I saw the need for me to become more educated in agriculture. And I ended up going back to school and taking science credits for a bachelor's degree. And when I moved up here, I was keeping bees. And I went to a beekeepers meeting, and Alan White, who was the agricultural program assistant at the time, I did a little program for the beekeepers on flowers that bees pollinate and visit, because I had a whole slide set that I had developed when I worked for the Horticultural Society in New York. And he said to me, you know what? We kind of need somebody here to answer the phones in the summer. We get a lot of questions about plants. And you seem to know a lot. Would you be interested? And that's how I started. It was at the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Sullivan County, in Liberty, on the Ferndale and Loomis Road. So before they had the Master Gardener program, which I started later on after I was there for a couple of years, they thought that would be a good idea, would be to have more volunteers come in to do some of that work. I got a lot of that knowledge working at not only the Horticultural Society in New York, but also at Cornell here in Sullivan County. And the knowledge that I got came from the consumers who would call with problems. And then you start to really investigate what their problem is. And you end up asking more questions of the person who called than they are asking you, to try to narrow down the, you know, where the problem actually is.
What was the typical questions that you used to get?
Oh, there would be, why do my tomatoes have this rot on the fruit, at the end of the fruit there? They don't seem to form correctly. It's called blossom end rot. And that's usually an indication that there's a deficiency in the soil. There's not enough calcium in the soil, which comes from the mineral phosphorus, which is added in the form of fertilizer. That's a typical question. Pollination problems, drainage. We were just talking about the amount of rain that we're getting right now, that you need rain, but you also need to have drainage, or else you're going to drown your plants, whether they be vegetables or flowers or whatever. and especially trees. Only certain trees really like to have wet feet. They need good drainage. There would be problems about various diseases that would come through. The famous tomato blight of about, 10 years ago now. That year, I decided to plant my tomatoes very, very intensely and close together, which was a big mistake. So we've learned now how to help avoid that problem. I am totally against using herbicides, for example. Any advice that I would give to somebody would definitely be from an organic and sustainable perspective.
Coming up June, July, and August, you have a walk-in question about plants.
At the Livingston Manor Library, I believe it's free. There'll be plant clinics in June, July, and August, twice a month. And those are going to be in competition with your program between 10 and 11 on Saturday mornings.
But that's okay, because you can listen to Farm and Country online after. What can folks expect from the plant clinics?
They can come with their sick plants, and they can be house plants or they can be outdoor plants for identification, if we can identify it, or if it's got spots on the leaves or it seems to be having a problem, we'll try to diagnose it. I say we, but it'll be me. And I'll do soil testing, too. So if people want to take a sample of soil, make sure it's dried out, and bring it in, can do a pH test. pH test can tell a lot if people are having trouble growing a certain thing or if they have a certain thing in mind that they want to grow. Some plants like a more acid environment, and some plants don't like it at all. So it'll be a plant clinic. It would be the same thing that we used to have at the Cooperative Extension. People used to be able to come in with sometimes bugs if they're dead insects. I am a rabid environmentalist, by the way, seriously.
When you did your permaculture classes for Apple Pond Farm, what kind of information did you share with folks? Tell us about your permaculture information.
Well, permaculture is a model, and we're going to do a program at the library, again, in Livingston Manor, on May 18th, just to talk about permaculture thinking rather than trying to do. You can't do a whole course on it. The course on permaculture is like a 72-hour course, where you take up all of the precepts, let's say, of permaculture. But permaculture is really just based on a model of nature. Nature can take care of the earth if we would just leave it alone, really. And when you think about it and we model ourselves about as nature models itself, it cooperates. The organisms in nature cooperate with each other. They catch and store resources like water. When we start interfering with nature, paving over green spaces with hard surfaces, we create problems. That's how you get runoff and you can't control water anymore. People come from all over to learn about permaculture. The main meeting is only an hour, so all we can talk about is the basic concepts of it. And if people want to go into more depth, I'm going to have a sign-up sheet. We can develop each component of permaculture.
To get information on the May event, how do people do that?
Is there a May event? It's May 18th. At the Livingston Manor Library, I believe it's free. You just go at 12.
Before we close, Maria, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so much talking. And I hope people won't hesitate to get in touch with me or come to the plant clinics. I really think we're at a point in our lives where we need to help each other and help the environment by working together to keep it beautiful, take care of it, and love each other.
Monday, April 22nd at 10 a.m., Radio Catskill presents The Future of Farming. We're taking a look into the next generation of farmers in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Who they are, why they do what they do, and what barriers they face in entering a notoriously difficult industry. Farmers talk about issues like land access, startup cost, knowledge sharing, and the inspiration that keeps them working towards success in the business of farming.
Beginner farmer classified by the USDA is someone who's been farming for less than 10 years. Too many people who are starting a business get to the point and just quit a little too soon. Because there was some points where, like, yeah, it wasn't working. It was totally hard. I built my customer base. I have my foothold in where I sell things. And we learned by falling on our faces repeatedly. But, you know, we've learned of, like, what works over time. Yeah.
Well, you don't know what you don't know. But I always try to learn more. So I've bought a lot of books on how to raise the type of animals that I'm interested in and make sure our hay fields are good, because I kind of knew that hay fields need to be fertilized every now and then, but I have no idea how much, when, or how do I even find out what they need. So this lecture here today was very good. So we're going to start with soil testing, and then we can figure out where to go from there. That's our current challenge. But there's so much written nowadays. You can find so much information about whatever topic you're interested in. You can find something about it.
As a beginner, you know, there's capital outlays anywhere you look. So you've got a lot of infrastructure expense. You got to pay through your learning curve on certain things. All of your animals, all of your feed, you know, so much of farming is pre-funded by the farmer. And then you make your money when and if you produce and sell that product. Managing capital and investing in the right areas is critical to success as a new farmer. There's also getting your brand out. So it's a relatively crowded space. Getting into farmers markets can be very difficult for new farmers.
Diversity is, like, so important. I look at some of these larger, old generational farms that have, like, a single product they're making, and I just can't imagine the amount of pressure those individuals must be under, because it's got to be very difficult when you have a family to feed and you have, you know, whatever your product is doesn't work out and nature does not go your way, and then you're broke. So diversity is a key to making sure that you have a long-term viable future. I say that to every young farmer I meet. I think it's so important.
Up-and-coming farmers, you know, I think it just depends on your specific situation. Everybody has a different level of risk that they want to take. For example, for me personally, I won't accept any debt risk. And so that's what's preventing me from growing faster, because I won't go into debt to build greenhouses or cold rooms or whatever. I'm doing everything by cash flow only. But in a way, it's good because it's keeping me humble and it's keeping me from getting too big too fast and getting overwhelmed. I think people who get into a field like this can get overwhelmed very easily if they get in over their heads.
I had a long career in the medical field and made a switch over to mushroom farming. And it's become a real passion, and originally started out as a hobby, and it just grew right into a business. Fear was a big thing, the unknown, wondering if I was going to succeed or not. That seemed to be a big part of it, and learning just to take the jump and diving right into it. It's been a really nice experience. It's a nice community of people that seem to help each other out. So
Don't be afraid and learn and follow your passion. If it's something that you're passionate about and you enjoy, farming can be very, very, very rewarding.
My advice would be to go ahead and do it. There's going to be some people that say you can't do it. It's tough. It's tough getting started, especially for young people. But if you can find someone who has a farm, who's willing to take someone in to help them get started, there's plenty of opportunity that way. You'll hear a lot of people say, well, you can't make a living farming anymore. Society has changed, so you have to change with it and adapt. What I would tell young people, follow your dreams. If you really have the passion for that, it'll happen. You'll have some ups and downs, I'm sure. We all do. But in time, it'll all work out for you.
For us, in the short run, we want to be able to pay our bills. We want to be able to pay our bills. Race kind of keeps you down, but people think that you want to be there. That's the problem. People think that you want to discuss race. I feel like my main issue should be like everyone's main issue, which should be focus on climate change. Right now, I'd rather be, you know, discussing climate change, not race. I'd rather be focusing on bees, increasing the bees, but not being a beekeeper, just having more flowers out there, just having more ways to, you know, to grow the bee population and leave the bee population alone.
The program is really trying to support historically underserved farmers so that people that have been farming for less than 10 years, women-owned and operated, BIPOC-owned and operated, small farms, organic farms, veteran farmers and farm workers. The reality that it's harder for folks who might not identify as like male or white to really enter the farming world, and trying to make sure that this program supports that and helps break down any barriers that it might have been up for folks before.
And I would encourage people not to overlook or sleep on urban ag and its potential. Folks in urban ag generally are working at quite small scale, but they also are facing, you know, huge headwinds in terms of getting sites fit for production. Urban agriculture and urban farms and urban producers shouldn't be overlooked in terms of being a part of the future of agriculture.
Join us for this special presentation, The Future of Farming, Monday, April 22nd at 10 a.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, Evan Padua, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Gardener Maria Grimaldi from Panther Rock Farm in Livingston Manor, and all the farmers who took their time for interviews for the special project, The Future of Farming. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM on your phone or smart speaker and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
I'm WJFF volunteer Barb Demarest. Thank you for giving to this community radio station. You helped us reach our goal. You helped end the fund drive. Donations from people like you make this station possible. You value community radio for enhancing the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania as a place you'd love. and your contribution helps us serve the many diverse communities in our listening area. Thank you.
Former President Trump is in real legal trouble, facing